Hi everyone, Camille here. It's 6 p.m. in London, 5 in Accra, and 7 a.m. in Hawaii. We're live, you're listening to Cosmic, exploring the world of change via the arts. Thank you for being here. We're talking to all kinds of artists in season 3 of the show, exploring their secret powers, locating tools, techniques, and stories that seem to be stuck in the art world, really. If you listen to the previous episodes, you're probably starting to realize that this focus on the arts is extremely promising when looking at it from the impact sector perspective. And I feel, and I know, we're just scratching the surface actually. One important question is, are you sitting comfortably right now? Good headphones, a drink or something. You have 22 seconds to run to the kitchen very quick. Let's go. Today, I'm opening a topic that I found out is extremely important to consider at the personal level when working to create new realities in our lives. We're going to talk about generational trauma or transgenerational trauma. Psychic legacies are often passed on through unconscious cues or affective messages that flow between adult and child. Sometimes anxiety falls from one generation to the next through the stories that are told. There are explanations that are a bit more quantic, let's say, but maybe we don't need to get into this right now. You're probably wondering at this very moment, am I possibly suffering from any generational trauma? Well, if your family comes from a country where there was some kind of war, some kind of dictator, or a country with a colonial history, if you belong to a minority suffering from racism or inequality of some sort, if there was any kind of tragical loss in your family or a shared response to a societal trauma, like a pandemic maybe, and one of these things happened less than 7 generations ago, chances are you're dealing with a form of generational trauma. The question is, what can we do about it? Well, quite a lot, actually. Today on Cosmic, we're going to receive some serious inspiration from Enam Gbewonyo, She's a cosmic British Ghanaian artist and curator based in London, mainly working with textile and performance arts. And I want to quote her artist statement. Inam's enchantment with textile making began as a little girl with a visit to a small weaving community somewhere in her ancestral home of Ewelland in Ghana. Weaving is intrinsic to the Ewe tribe's way of life, forming part of their storytelling, their ceremony, and celebration. Its processes are heralded as meditative and healing, and its origins cosmic, embedded in the myth that spiders taught the Ewes to weave. A tale she learned in later years on artistic pilgrimage, a lightbulb moment which justified her long-held obsession with the spider's web. A large part of her body of work is using tights as a basis material. Tights as in a close-fitting garment made of nylon or other knitted yarn. And you'll understand why in a few minutes.
Will somebody wear me to the fair? Love and joy, faith and hope to people forlorn. Inside every man lives the seed of life. If he looks within, he finds beauty and power.
Chapter 1, Establishing Symbolism.
Black-owned brands, black women-owned brands that were creating new tights for women of color. And up until that point, I hadn't known of any brands that, you know, had that or created that visibility for us. As black women, when I say the collective us as black women. And that really interested me. And I started thinking about the history of this pair, this piece of clothing.
Remember my first years of school, I was so innocent. I just wanted to learn, I never been so content.
We are now in, you know, 2015, I guess, was the first brand, or 2014, around that time the first brand was founded. That late, exactly. So that's what I was thinking as well. I want to know, how long has it taken us to get to this point?
We talked about the fact that the very first pair of stockings was made in the 14th century. And so, yeah, Inam has been researching where does the history of this tight and the history of black women intersect.
Thank you. that crosses, you know, the era of empire, the British Empire. And I look at Britain specifically because I am born in Britain, I'm Black British. So thinking of empire and slavery, so at its height around the 1800s. So that would be when these women were taken and placed in the Americas, in the Caribbean, and they were growing the cotton that was then spun and knitted into these stockings. Specifically significant because this was around the time when classism became like this entity that was introduced in Britain, and a lot of people would show their wealth through their clothing, as we still do to this day. So stockings were a way of displaying that wealth. So whether you wore cotton or silk, you had to be of a certain means to be able to afford those things. Really gorgeous, like white stockings. And I was thinking, well, that's quite extravagant because this isn't even a human being wearing it, it's a doll. And the fact that, so these are descendants of a man whose wealth would have been generated from these plantations that he owned and these human beings that he owned as objects. And then that kind of took me into this discourse around the objectification of Black women and Black women's bodies. And then I also started to look at the descendants of, you know, the women of slavery and colonization who then moved to the UK from the 40s onwards. And they were invited by Britain to come and support the British service industry. And so many of them worked in the NHS, in the National Health Service, as nurses, and thinking about their experience moving from, you know, their homes that they'd known all their lives, and then moving to a country where, unlike what was promoted, they weren't accepted with open arms, and they experienced real severe racism. And that would have been the first time that they ever became aware of this idea of blackness, because they're coming from places, well, specifically in Africa, where they are surrounded by, you know, Black people. Yes, you know, after colonization, they were very much aware of, you know, the UK as mother country, and in some schools they were actually taught by missionaries and nuns, but that very real idea of them being lesser because of this color, the color of their skin, was only made known to them when they moved to the UK.
Inam established a whole body of research that she now uses as a story universe for her pieces.
In all of these stages, there was always this sense of the Black woman as nurturer, whether it was looking after the master's children, becoming their nannies, being nurses, providing care for people who don't necessarily want you to, or want you to touch them even. And then the idea of them being taken away from their families and, you know, providing that care to others and not being present as much or enough for their own family, and the effect that that then has on their children. We'll be right back. trauma and the fact that a lot of the pain and the hurt that these women experienced could never be dealt with and was never spoken about. And it was just kind of buried deep within, and that's kind of passed on from generation to generation. So kind of reflecting on all of these things and thinking about this material, thinking about, so my mother was a nurse and she moved to the UK in the 60s. And she's another person that has never really expressed those experiences to me until I spoke to her because of this body of work. And even then, I noticed that there was only so much that she was actually open to sharing. So I started thinking about this material, these tights, which these women wore, being able to tell those stories. Because again, as I'm talking about this idea of energy, this material that you wear on your skin every day absorbs these energies, absorbs these emotions that you're feeling as you're walking about your day, as you're experiencing these things. And so if you can't, for whatever reason, really voice those stories, then these items can do that for you. And so I very much was interested in working with used tights for that reason.
Finding the symbolism that will help your psyche navigate the issues you're working to heal is really important here. This is the pillar that is making Enam's approach work so well. And that's also where the creative mind comes into the game. As usual, I'm sculpting the sound with a few cosmic tracks to keep the right hemisphere of the brain fully functional. And I always ask the guests what they listen to, what they like. So trying to combine. And I'm like salsa as well. We'll see how we can fit that in.
So tired, I sleep through the light.
one thing that really inspired me with Enam, that really inspires me with Enam, is her endless appetite for connecting with her roots, with her ancestors, with their craft and their practices, and then integrating these forces in her work and in her life.
The keys to the Jeep. Vroom. I'm driving to the beach. Top down, loud sound, see my peace. Give them pounds, now look who it be. It be me, 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 and Timothy. Look like it's about to rain, what a shame. I got the armor or the shine up the same. Oh, Missy.
And I was really interested, because there is such a conversation around whether craft is art, I was really interested in being one of those, you know, disruptors.
Chapter 2, Choice of the Form.
Every time I go home, as in go back to Ghana, art is around, all around you, in everything, in, well, more in the traditional architecture, more so than, because we are so much like the West now, and, you know, so many high rises and things. But when you go back to kind of the more remote areas and the traditional architecture that you see, to the clothing that we wear, to the pots, the pans, use, everything is crafted in, and the artistry is inherent in everything. And so I liked the idea of just creating things that weren't necessarily what, you know, you would see in a white cube normally.
In Nigeria, we have a saying, water no get any me. Uh-huh. As a boy, it is one of those things my mother used to tell me that meant nothing and everything.
There's such a beautiful kind of essence to craft and the art of making by hand. With human hands, there's a real energy and spirituality to that process of making. And I always talk about this idea of that transference of this energy from your hands to the thing that you're making, and then to the audience that see it and connect with it, or to the person that actually then has such a connection that they want to own that piece and they take it with them.
If you want to wash, water you must use. If your head is hot, water cool you down. For your child to grow, water him go use.
If water can you.
Regarding the form, a crafty approach was an obvious choice, it seems. But there was one more ingredient that was going to greatly enhance the impact of her body of work. The performance dimension.
Performance is very new to me. So my very first performance I did at the end of 2018. I created this idea of a performance, a performative act, at least. It was very kind of simple in comparison to the performances that I now deliver. But that was my first kind of innings into delivering some kind of performative act to kind of deliver the messaging of my work.
performance. Let's talk about performance then.
The idea was to record an audio that kind of traversed these different periods that I've been looking at. So it was these kind of fictitious characters, but I had linked them to my matrilineal ancestors because I was also talking about myself and my mother. Grandmother, who was born at the height of the colonial era, specifically in Ghana, and then my mother, and thinking about her move to the UK in the 60s, and then obviously myself and my own personal journey of kind of reclaiming my sense of self and my idea of beauty and womanhood as a Black woman who was born in the West and, you know, for a large part of my life have, you know, assimilated to these kind of Western ideals of what beauty looks like. Creating a visual timeline of the progression of this pair of stockings to tights to now this tight that was in my skin tone in my nude.
I arrived 18:30, already searing in a pain I never knew such a cold could cause. This dark, bitter cold left me broken, in constant fear of the most violent of deaths. How could I shield myself from this murderous cold?
Black women, for a large part of history, have always held these kind of service roles and roles of servitude, where they are the kind of foundations and the pillars of all these empires that exist today. And I lucked out in the space that it was this kind of auditorium space with stairs, so I could do this very kind of visual idea of descending down to this timeline or washing line, presenting these works on the washing line as the audio is speaking and responding to the words in the audio, and then ascending, and this idea of the ascension being me now reclaiming myself by channeling my matrilineal ancestors.
Interesting to note, Enam keeps creating new framings to the stories that she's working with by iterating her approach to performance each time. And as she iterates, she heals new pieces of generational trauma.
I am then kind of greeted by, you know, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, my great-great-great-grandmother, and dating all the way back to a time before colonization, before we had any sense of the West, any sense of these kind of ideals and this idea of having to assimilate to these ideals of beauty, and thinking about what would that woman look like, how would she, you know, traverse the world very confident in who she is as an Igbo woman, because she wouldn't even have any construct of blackness, and how can I then channel that to be able to later rest all this generational trauma that exists within me and be able to now exist in with a real truer sense of myself more authentically. I'm much more conscious in myself and my spirituality. I'm much more conscious of the universal spirituality, and so be a much more kind of authentic human being in everything that I do and in every way that I connect and engage with everything around me. Performances have developed, and I use a lot more movement and dance, and part of that is in response to some of the research work I've been doing around the ballet industry and black ballerinas and the fact that they have to dye their own tights to match their skin tone. In my second performance, I also wanted to incorporate a traditional Igbo dance called Agbaja. And Agbaja means give life. It's like bringing life force into your body. And the whole the act is kind of an undulation, and it's kind of expanding your chest and very much bringing more air, so bringing more life into your body. It's such a beautiful dance because it has such meaning to it, in this idea of rebirthing yourself and giving yourself life. And in order to do that by kind of opening up, expanding the chest and bringing it back in, you are kind of realigning the seven chakras of your body. For the performance, it was a way of displaying that link to the ancestors. It's that idea of the ancestors kind of taking over my body, and in that way I respond through this dance, and I then emerge and stand tall and powerful in myself.
The melody touch us, trust the remedy heals. Feels like the first time I got my hands behind wheels. That rude boy steals and I surrender. He knows where I'm tender. He knows the words that make me weak. His fingers pressed against my cheek. I can speak, no sing, no distraction. I let the phone ring, full attraction. Hey, you know you got it going good. When you can just be. Now give me some loving, darling, and we'll feel. Go ahead and say you're going. Oh, if you're gonna carry on and get down like that. Can't hear your words, they lost your strength. Oh, when you're gonna carry on and get down like that. You're never gonna feel that love again. Oh no, if you're gonna carry on and get down like that. I never stop opening my heart or playing that part of being true. But the drama's on you.
Chapter 3, offering healing effects to an audience. We talked about traditions and in ancestral cultures around dancing rituals and how they interlink with the creation of reality in the material world. And this is something Enam experienced from the audience perspective.
And one of our festivals, Hogba Chocho, is very much about that. It's about kind of giving thanks to the ancestors and to the gods for reaping, you know, a successful harvest. And it's like you say, it's very performative. It's all about the dance. And I have, you know, been blessed to have been able to see this in real life. And it is so powerful and so emotive. And the performer takes the audience along with them and delivers them to, you know, a new place. And that's very much what I attempt and hope that I do with my performances. And very much thinking specifically about the about Black women and taking them on that journey so that we all come to this place of healing and laying to rest of all the demons and the trauma that has been passed down from generation to generation, because I feel like part of that is what holds us back. It's definitely held me back as a person, and it manifests in so many different ways, even in terms of my health. So being able to deliver us to a point where we don't make those same mistakes and we're not causing that same damage to the next generation, because we're not passing that on, and we're not, because of that pain and hurt, then inflicting new pain and new hurt to the next generation.
Right.
But it's also about creating a space where the audience feels safe to go on that journey with you. I think that that idea of creating safety is through that performance, because it is a very vulnerable thing, especially as an artist and dealing with the things that I'm dealing with, which are very personal to me. It's a very vulnerable thing to lay yourself bare in that way. And I kind of say that in a sense, it's quite literal, because I am wearing like skin tone leotard, and it's very intimate. You are seeing my flesh, you know, I'm moving, like you say, it's a very sensual act. There are times where I'm constricting myself with the tights. And even in terms of the colors of the tights, I'm very intentional in the fact that the tights are always the nude that is not my own. And so you really feel that idea of feeling constricted and trying to break free. And then when I eventually do, it's just such a release. And even in the way that I move and my breathing, everything changes. And so I hope that I am kind of taking the audience on that journey when they're feeling that constriction, and then they're feeling the release, and then they breathe. And I think it's just so powerful.
Your style, your smile, your pace mentality. Lord, have mercy on me. I was blind, now I can see what I came supposed to be. Baby, I feel free. Come on and go with me. Let's take a long walk around the park after dark. Find a spot for us to spark. Conversation, verbal elation, stimulation, share our situation, temptation, education, relaxation, elevation. Maybe we can talk about Sora 3118. Your background.
Making others feel safe by making yourself vulnerable. Ah, this is such an important insight as well. Thank you, Inam. We also had a chance to talk about what's going on when you perform without an audience.
Then you're humble, man, I'm numb, you're feeling. I can feel everything that you bring.
Space in its normal kind of exhibition hours. So you would have tourists kind of coming in and out, some of the locals kind of coming in and out. There were times where it was very quiet, there was no one there, and so it was very much an intimate performance between myself and this cocoon. And at those times, I was having this really kind of reflective moment of really connecting with my ancestors, first of all with my mother, and really thinking deeply about our relationship and giving thanks for everything that she sacrificed and everything that she's been through and all the things that she hasn't communicated, all the pain, all the strength, all the resilience, all those things that sometimes you just don't say. And then doing the same with my grandmother and great-grandmother, who I never met and can only really imagine who they might have been. But thinking, and then it was at that point that I started really thinking about the fact that I am here because of them. There's a piece of each of them that lies within me. And so whatever their story, whatever their journey, even if I don't know it because we don't have it documented, I do, because it lies in me and I wouldn't be here without them. So I had this really kind of emotive moment in this space, and it will always live with me. So as much as the performances are about creating these healing spaces for the audience, it also creates that space of healing for me personally and for my own journey, which is really beautiful as well.
Maybe eat some magic, eat some magic.
So I've grown so much as an artist through the performative element, and I'm really excited about continuing that journey and growing and developing that space and that voice and that element of storytelling, because I think it's just such a beautiful, powerful thing.
Brother, call a girl a bitch or a hoe, trying to make a sister feel low. You know all of that got to go. Now everybody knows there's exceptions to this rule. I don't be getting mad when we playing, it's cool. But don't you be calling me out my name. I bring breath to those who disrespect me like a dame. That's why I'm talking. One day I was walking down a block, I had my cut off shorts on, right? Cause it was crazy hot. I walked past these dudes when they passed me. One of them felt my booty, he was nasty. Yeah. I turned around red, somebody was catching the wrath. Then the little one said,
yeah, me bitch.
And laughed. Since he was with his boys, he tried to break fly. I punched him dead in his eyes. Said, who you calling a bitch?
There is so much that we are so unaware of in, you know, this universal plane, and there's so much work we need to do within, because all the answers lie within us, which we don't realize as well. So I am really blessed to have that awareness to be able to try and do the work. And, you know, it's a lifelong journey. Who knows if you'll ever get to that, you know, real achievement. But just, it's just nice to know that I'm trying my best to be much more aware of myself. My journey is ongoing.
Even though you're treating me bad, but I don't want to see my kids see me getting beat down by daddy smacking mommy all around.
My journey is ongoing.
My man don't really love you if he hits you. This is my notice of the tool. I'm not taking it no more. I'm not your personal whore. That's not what I'm here for. Ain't nothing good gonna come to you till you do right by me. Brother, you waiting.
Who you calling a bitch?
You and I do. What's going on in your mind is what I ask you. Yeah. But like, yo, you don't hear me though. You wear a rag around your head and you call yourself a gangster bitch. Now that you saw Apache's video, I saw you wildin', acting like a fool. I peeped you out the window, jumping girls after school. But where did all of this come from? A minute ago, you wasn't heard and nobody ever heard of you. Damn, you would wanna be.
All answers lie within us. What a great way to close. What a great way to close by opening this invitation to us to explore what needs to be solved within. I'm sure you will agree that Enam's dedication to go within, to travel back in time and open all the doors she can find via the artistic practice, is truly inspiring. We know that this individual healing is what shapes a better collective future, much more than expecting answers to come from the outside. We just need to do the work. I'll even say that this is the door to freedom, not whatever politicians, marketers, billionaires, scientists, or social movements want to make us believe freedom is. Because from that work, what happens? All that cosmic energy we learn how to tap into, all of our newly found authenticity, then expands to the people around us. And I can say for sure, Inam's cosmicness had an impact on me at the energetic level, as well as in terms of tangible real-life opportunities. And now, hopefully, you are inspired, and you're going to do more work as well. And that's called changing the world from within. This is a key theme at Cosmic because it undermines thousands of problematic narratives that we hear every day, and those narratives that shape the norms, that shape culture, that shape what is considered common sense. Okay, I'm getting more and more homework each week with each guest, and you too. Christine J. Lee asked us to commit to the daily practice of an instrument. Leon Sisix got us to go paint something confusing in the street. Chris Jordan is forcing us to contemplate beauty all around and look at the stars every night. And now, thanks to Inam, we have to go within and solve generational trauma. Wow. Let us know your thoughts at hello@cosmic.show or on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram. Thank you so much, Inam, for this important contribution to the series. We'll be following your lead. I'm linking your website and social media profiles in the notes. Thank you to Etienne Previtali for the support with music and sounds. And last but not least, thank you for tuning in. You know what to do if you like what you've heard. Speak to you next week. Ciao.